journey into the Bible and explore its hidden text and rich wisdom. Join Adel Kazilski Mondays at 1 p.m. for the trip of a lifetime.
Shavuot Tov and welcome to 101.9 High FM. I'm Adel Kazilski. Been off the air for a little while. I had a long, long break. Certainly, I hope you didn't have a break learning Torah. I didn't, but I wasn't around by my microphone to keep you company. I'm glad to be back in my seats and glad for you to join me again as we continue through the mystical texts of the Torah. We are studying the book of Exodus. We're in the Parsha of Bo. And, you know, I love looking at Hashgacha Pratis at Divine Providence. And believe it or not, we are starting in the same week as we are going to be reading the Parsha of Bo in the Torah, this Shabbat. So isn't that amazing that we're starting to learn again very Parsha that we are going to be reading this Saturday in the in the synagogue. So glad that you joined me. As always, you can always ask a question or send a telegram on an SMS line 34519 or a telegram number 083. Oh, geez, I have forgotten the telegram number now. Look at that. I just had a minutes. Old age. Okay, I'm going to wait till Craig helps me with that one. I will give you that number again. Oh, there I've got it. 083-895-1019 is our telegram number. So we're going to actually be starting at a very, very exciting stage. Until the end of last year, we were reading all about the many plagues that God sent upon the Egyptians to let the Jews go, so to convince Pharaoh to let the Jews go out, even though he was pretty stubborn about it. And then he gets warned of the final plague, which is the plague of the destruction of the firstborn. We discussed all about the Korban Pesach, and now we're at the point where dong dong, the bell turns 12, the clock turns 12 o'clock midnight, and the plague of the firstborn comes upon Egypt. And boy, did it cause an absolute tumult. And that's where we are going to start. So we are in chapter 12 of the book of Exodus. We're in verse 29. Vayehi. And it was. And we know when there is always a Vayehi, it means that there is not good news. Vayehi b'chatzi halayla. It was midnight. Hashem hika kol b'chor be'eretz Mitzrayim, God came and smote all the firstborn that were in Egypt. Mibchor Paroi, from the firstborn of Paro, Hayoshev al Kiso, who was sitting on his throne, ad b'chor hashvi asher b'beit habor, all the way down to the firstborn of the prisoner who was sitting in the dungeon, b'chor b'chor behema, and every firstborn animal. So the first question we need to ask ourselves is, why was this the final blow? And as we've been discussing in the plagues, we know that every single plague wasn't a haphazard, vengeful God just pouring his wrath on the people, but rather it was a midah keneged midah, one deed has a turn on another, and every single plague was well thought out and punished the Egyptians in the same way that they had punished the Jews. So let's talk about why God would punish the Egyptians with such a horrific plague, such as the plague of the firstborn. Well, truthfully, The decree had been sealed long ago. If you recall, and we can go back a little bit in time, when Paro became enraged at the first appearance of Moshe and Aaron, he said then, go away, and it seems like you've got nothing better to do because you're asking me to go on a three-day journey, okay? Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to make things worse. with, and you no longer, the Israelite people are no longer going to receive any straw for making bricks. And we know then that they had to go out into the fields after they had done a day's work, okay? And they had to go and collect their own straw. They stood on like a whole lot of very sharp stubble along the way. Their feet bled. And when they kneaded the straw into clay with their feet, their blood mixed with water until the bricks were redeemed. And so the bricks even had Jewish blood. And there's a story in the Midrash that tells us that there was a woman by the name of Rachel. She was a granddaughter of Shetulach. And she was very advanced in pregnancy. And she had spent a grueling day in the field gathering straw. And then her husband and her were busy after hours kneading the clay for bricks into a huge vat. But because she was so advanced in pregnancy, suddenly she went into labor and she sadly miscarried her firstborn child into the clay. Before she could even recover her now dead child, the Egyptians drove her and her husband to a new job and they took the clay along with the dead infant and they poured it into one of the large clay bricks. Absolute brutality. Revolting. You cannot think of anything worse, though quite honestly, when you think about October 7th, we can understand the level of brutality. It says then that the angel Gabriel descended and he snatched the brick that contained the dead infant and he presented it before Kiseh HaKavod, before the heavenly throne. And that night, God convened the heavenly ICJ, that's very, very fair, the heavenly tribunal, and it was decreed that if a nation can become so immoral, so depraved, so brutal, then the midah keneged midah, the deed for deed, the measure for measure, will be, in fact, that all firstborn of the Egyptians will be killed. And that's why now we will see this absolutely devastating plague coming upon them. Another reason why the firstborn of the Egyptians were killed was that, if you recall again, back in time, Paro had contracted a severe skin disease, and he couldn't find any reprieve from it. He didn't know what to do. And he was advised that the firstborn Hebrew infants' blood would be a particularly effective cure. And so we're told in the Midrash that every single day he would have 300-400 infants slaughtered, okay, so that he could bathe in their blood. And so Hashem went and said that he will revenge that and he will, in fact, go and kill all the firstborn of Egypt. And this brings up in mind the idea that we have a saying in Proverbs, Rabot machshavot belev ish ve'atzat Hashem hitakum, that many thoughts are in the heart of a person, but it is what Hashem decides that actually comes about. And so we can see over here that Paro was acting in a particularly despicable manner, in a particularly brutal manner. And at the end of times, you can see that he actually got what it is that was coming to him. One more idea as to why there was the plague of the firstborn. And it's alluded into a verse right back in chapter 2 where it says the king of Egypt died and the Israelites groaned because of the service. What does it mean? So one of the explanations, it wasn't that they only groaned because of the fact that there was like a hardship in terms of what they were doing. But when Paro began to murder the firstborn, the Israelites began to moan because the divine service that the Jews conducted was normally performed by the firstborn. Only after Moshe and Aaron went into the desert did we get the concept of having the Kohanim, the priests. But until that point of time, the firstborns were the ones that carried out the avodah, the service. And so their cry because of the service came before Hashem, which means that Hashem saw the Israelites weeping over the personal loss of not now having firstborns to perform their services and pray to God. And so now Paroi got it measure for measure.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back, and we're learning chapter 12 of Parshat Bo, the parsha that we're actually reading in the Torah this week. And just before the break, we went in through the various reasons as to why it was befitting for Hashem to punish the Egyptians with the plague of the firstborn. They acted in the most incredibly brutal manner in terms of the Jewish people, and now they were getting back the very same treatment that they had given the Jews. Now, it's midnight as we spoke, and it's the eve of the 15th of Nisan, and it says that Hashem struck down all the firstborn in Egypt. Now, let's just go through what all the firstborn in Egypt meant. Firstly, by the way, when Moshe made this announcement, the Egyptians begged the Israelites to take their children. And as Jews are, we're full of rahmanas, we're full of compassion. They agreed, they complied. And they placed the Egyptian children in the same bed as their own children. But when the plague struck, the Egyptian children were killed, while the Israelite children slept right next to them and were spared. There's two opinions as to when the plague actually took place. According to one opinion, it began at midnight and it lasted until morning. Another opinion states that it came at the stroke of midnight, and all the firstborns were killed in one instant. Now, who was killed? Firstly, it began with Paroi's firstborn, because his firstborn was the heir to the throne. Okay, so that was the end of him. And then it went and struck a number of the royal princesses whom Paro had imprisoned in his royal dungeon. They too were killed because they were ones that loved to watch the Israelites suffer. Now, generally, when things are bad, when there's difficulty on the ground, what really happens is that if there are slaves and prisoners, they tend to take the side of other people who are imprisoned. Because generally, oppressed people tend to join together and respect each other. There was such a heavy prejudice against the Israelites that even the slaves and the prisoners hated them, because the Israelites were very different. They were different morally, spiritually, and the other prisoners couldn't tolerate them. So they could have gone free. They could have taken the side of the Israelites. They didn't. And they chose to remain in the dungeon, and therefore any firstborn that was sitting in the dungeon, they died as well. All the firstborn animals in Egypt also died. The first animals to die were the sheep, because the sheep were the sacred animals of Egypt. So remember, when God is destroying everything, He is also destroying their gods. So the first god that they destroyed is the sheep, and then all other animals sacred to the Egyptians also died. So no animal that had survived all the other plagues, if they were firstborn, they died. And the Midrash also goes and says that one of the other reasons that God killed the animals along with the Egyptians was to show that on that night, both of them died alike. Now, even firstborn Egyptian slaves died. Okay, so that's what we said about the dungeon. They all died. And don't think that the firstborn was only there for the male contingent of society. Firstborn girls and women also died. So it didn't matter whether you were a firstborn man, a firstborn woman. It was irrelevant when it, if you were a firstborn, that was it. It didn't matter whether you were male or you were female. There was one exception to this entire story, and that is Batya or Bitya. Batya was the Egyptian princess, and she went and saved Moshe from the river. She had compassion, and so when there was a decree against all firstborns, Moshe prayed she should be spared. Now, we're told that there is a verse in Proverbs. I'm trying to look it up now. I was supposed to do so before I came online. Just going to find it now. It's part of the Eshet Chayil that we read, that we actually sing on Friday nights. The husband sings this to their wives. There is a verse, it's verse 18. It says the following. She senses her merchandise is good. Her lamp is not extinguished at night. And that is the fact that Batya saw Moshe Rabbeinu as good merchandise, and that's why her light was not extinguished, meaning on the night of the death of the firstborn. Then if you want to get really particular about who died, how do you consider somebody firstborn? Is it firstborn to the mother or firstborn to the father? Well, it was irrelevant. Whether they were firstborn of their fathers or their mothers, they died. Okay? And it goes as far as saying that because Egypt was steeped in immorality, completely steeped in immorality, there were many, many times where there were firstborns that people didn't even know. Say a woman committed adultery, she felt pregnant with an adulterous child, even though she was married to a guy and she'd already had a firstborn. If she had intimate relationships with the adulterer and felt pregnant with the adulterer, that was considered a firstborn. And they too passed away. Now, the torment around this became even worse insofar as anybody. I'll do this actually afterwards. I'll go back. I just want to say one more thing, and I'll come back to the torment. There were people that were saved in this plague, and the mashal, the parable, is given about a king who made a feast for his child, and on the same day he said he was going to kill all his enemies. But he said, whoever is a friend of my child, okay, you can come and join us in the celebration and you won't die. And so anybody who came to the king's palace didn't die. Similarly, any Egyptian who actually understood the severity of what God was saying, if they decided to join the Jewish people and decided to participate in the feast of Passover, they were spared even if they were firstborn. Also, by the way, just going back to all the firstborns that died, if a woman was pregnant with her first child on that night, she miscarried. Okay? The only firstborn that did not die, the only one in the whole of Egypt, was Paroi himself. Why? because God wanted to spare him until the splitting of the Red Sea, where it would be the complete, absolute end, and he would see complete destruction there. So the bell goes dong, dong. It's 12 midnight. Whether it happened straight away or whether it happened progressively through the night, you can just imagine what was going on in the land of Egypt, with children dying all over the place, people dying all over the place, people that didn't even know they were firstborn, dying everywhere. Vayakam Paro Laila, who? Paro stayed up that night. Hu v'chol avadav, all his servants, all his officials, v'chol Mitzrayim, and the whole of Egypt, because just it was basically a massacre. It was a massacre across the board, and there wasn't a house in Egypt that there wasn't tears, there wasn't screaming, there wasn't crying. The entire Egypt was in an absolute and utter turmoil. So Hubu Abadam Batihi, and there was Mitzrayim. There was a tremendous scream throughout the whole of Egypt, ki ein bayit asher ein sham met, because there was not one house where there wasn't a death. Absolutely horrific. Right? So when, by the way, just, this is where I wanted to say how horrific it actually became, that when children died in Egypt, Egyptians would often make a large portrait of the dead child in a kind of chapel as a remembrance. And if this child was, in fact, a firstborn, even the portrait of the child crumbled and its dust drifted through the house. And this was exceedingly painful. So even if there was a house where there wasn't a firstborn, or the child that died was a firstborn, their picture would crumble. And this was exceedingly painful for the parents. It was as if they were re-experiencing their child's death. Amongst the lower classes, what would happen if children passed away, they would be buried in courtyards. And again, on that night when there was this plague of the firstborn, dogs started roaming all over the place, and they went into the courtyards and they frantically started digging up the bones of any firstborn child. It says that the dogs invaded a special place called the City of the Dead. They started digging up human bones. They started chewing on them. And for parents of a firstborn, it just meant that their children had just died a second death. So just if you really close your mind, close your eyes and imagine what was going on that night, from the strike of the clock at 12, it was absolutely horrific. It seems that also what God did was that there were lights in the sky, okay, that night. It made the place bright as daylight, so everybody could see what was going on. It wasn't that people were groping around in the dark. As it says in Tehillim, night is as bright as day, darkness is as light. So God caused a miracle, and there was a lot of light so that everybody could go and see the absolute devastation that was happening in the courtyard. Where were the Jews? Where were the Israelites? God had tranquilized them. All of them had taken a sleeping tablet and made them sleep peacefully. They didn't hear the screams. They didn't hear the cries. They slept through it. They did not feel the forces of destruction that was filling Egypt that night. And that was that. So now we're going to see what actually happens with Paro. If you recall, the last time that Moshe and Aaron was in Paro's court, Moshe and Aaron said, "You will not see us again." Paro kicked him out and said, "If you come back here again, I'm going to kill you." Right? So I don't ever want to see your faces again. And Moshe and Aaron said, "That's fine. We're happy with that, because we're not going to see you either again. In fact, the next time you see us, you're going to be coming to us, okay? And this is exactly what happened. Vayikra leMoshe la'Aaron laila. Paroi cried out to Moshe and Aaron, Vayomer, and he says, Kumu, get up, Tsu, get out, mitochami, from amongst my nation, Gamatem, you too, Gam b'nei Israel, also the children of Israel, Ulchu itu et Hashem kedaberchem, go and serve God as you've said, Gam tzonchem, Gam bekarchem, also your sheep and your cattle, kechu, take, kasher dibartem, as you have said, belechu, go, uberachtem gam oti, and please bless me. So here Paro was like investigating the situation. He had gone to his official homes to determine the extent of the plague. He realizes that that Egypt now is in an absolutely catastrophic position. He realizes he has no time now to sit on his fat throne and start asking for Moshe and Aaron to come to him. And we all know, as what happened, as I explained, is that they're never walking back into the palace again. So what did he do? Okay, he had to run through the cities of the streets of the city and trying to find the two brothers, Moshe, Aaron, he cried out, where are you? And this is where we have the famous little kiddies song that every kid, little kid in nursery school, Paroi in pajamas in the middle of the night, that there was Paroi, and there he was in his little pajamas running around the streets of Goshen looking for Moshe and Aaron. Now, where were Moshe and Aaron? They had remained in the Egyptian capital because earlier Moshe had said to them, one day all your servants are going to come and bow down before me. So he was waiting. He was basically saying that Paro himself would come. Out of respect of royalty, he had to say, he couldn't say it outright. He said, all your servants. But they were waiting for the time where Paroi, crazed in his pajamas, was going to come, prostrate himself before them and beg them to let the people go. Now, the Jews had a bit of fun with him, okay? They wanted to have a bit of revenge. So when he came into the land of Goshen, seeking the brothers, saying, where's he? The Israelites gave him all sorts of wrong directions. And before long, they had him completely, he was completely a madman. He was screaming, get out, get out. He was screaming to anybody who he saw, you, all you Israelites, leave my country, go worship your God, do whatever you want. And eventually when he does find Moshe, he says, go worship your God, just as you said, you can even take your sheep and cattle and just go. Okay. Moshe and Aaron heard Paroi, but they weren't moved, and they didn't answer him. They just heard Paro begin weeping, and they remained completely unresponsive. And truthfully, if you look at what Paro is saying, Paro is not saying, I'm letting the people go. He's letting the people go so that they can sacrifice to their God for 3 days. He had every single intention for the Israelites to return. This is 101.9 High FM.
High FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
This is 101.9 High FM. I'm Adel Kozulski, and we are going through the absolutely dramatic turnaround of good old Paroi and his insistence now that the Jews leave. And we're going to do one more verse, because not only was there the horrific death of all the firstborns and all those that we spoke about, the animals, the humans, the destruction and digging up of bones and the crashing of portraits of firstborns. There was other civil unrest. Let's look in. We're looking at verse 33 of chapter 12. Vatechezak Mitzrayim al ha'am. Now what happens is that you have the civil unrest that the Egyptians are urging the people, what? To do what? Lemaher, l'shacham min ha'aretz. They're telling, the Egyptians are telling the Jews to hurry up and to leave the country. Ki amru kulanu, because they all went and said, kulanu metim, we are all dead men. So when the Egyptians saw Paroi returning from his encounter with Moshe, number one, they tried to kill him. Okay? The Israelites are sitting there watching the commotion. They're busy completing their Passover celebration. They're singing songs of praise and thanksgiving. And Paroi is begging his gods to go find Moshe and Aaron, tell them to tell the Jews to leave that night, but they were not interested. The Egyptians themselves, before Paroi comes to Moshe, says to the Jews, can you guys just all get out? Okay, they realize that once a man is dead, he is dead. And if they allowed the plague to carry on and on and on, very soon all of them would be dead. Okay, so really what happened was that there was a rebellion, and we actually did speak about it when Moshe announced that there would be the death of the firstborn. There was a rebellion of all the firstborn against Paroi. And when Moshe said to them, you're all going to die, they stormed the palace. There was huge civil unrest there. And we were told in the Midrash that 600,000 Egyptians were killed. There was infighting between them all. Then came the plague that killed all the firstborn. And then it says that when Paroi saw his own firstborn son die, he took a sword and he killed all his advisors for telling him not to free the Israelites. So when we see in the verse that it says that Paroi got up at night, he was up at night, Midrash tells us he got up like a madman. He himself started killing everybody he saw. He went to the palace of his advisors. He was murdering them and their families. And the carnage just went on and on. There was blood, guts, and gore everywhere. And so Paroi in his pajamas coming to Moshe was really there for him to try stop the rivers of blood that were actually flowing in Egypt. And when Paroi groveled at Moshe's feet and he's saying to them, leave, get out now. What does Moshe say to him? He says, we cannot. We can't leave right now. It's like in the middle of the night, because Hashem commanded us that no man should leave his house until morning. And anyway, why should we leave right now? We like criminals in the middle of the night that we need to sneak out in the middle of the night. Are we running away from something? We're not doing anything like that. We're going to leave like mentioned. We're going to leave during the day when all your people will be able to see us and let them see what becomes of your slaves. And besides, said Moshe to Paroi, the Midrash tells us that he says, you kept us a slave for so many years, what difference will a few hours make? We are told that while Moshe was talking, the royal princess Bitya joined the group, and she said to him, I raised you as a son, you were brought up as a royal prince, and is this how you are paying me back? Because when I saw you lying in that basket, should I have realized that you would destroy my land? So we're told that Moshe Rabbeinu said to her, have you personally been harmed by any of the catastrophes? To which she answered, no, I admit I have remained safe. And are you a firstborn of both your mother and your father, yet you're still alive, said Moshe? So Batya responds, what is this worth to me? Yes, I am alive now, but what is it worth to me when all my brothers and all my family are dead in the palace? All the children are dead in the palace. What good is my life? To which Moshe replied, it is not you who have been punished. When God said to Paroi, let my people go, all your relatives advised them not to. They blasphemed against God and they deserved to die. Now, remember, Paroi is listening to this completely dumbstruck, okay? And he was listening to this whole conversation between him and Batya, says that he couldn't take it anymore. He threw himself at Moshe's feet again and began pleading, don't let me die, don't let me die. I'm also firstborn. Moshe replies, you can rest easy, at least for now. Although you are firstborn, you will not die. because Hashem wants you to live and see that he is the Lord of the whole world. But please, says my Paroi, get your people out of Egypt as soon as possible. Every minute you delay, more and more Egyptians are dying. If you remain here until tomorrow, no one will be alive. So it says that Moshe held Paro in a gaze, like a bird grasping a sparrow. And he said, you are so concerned with your people that you want the plague to stop. Then just go through the city and make this announcement to my people. Say loudly, you are your own masters. You need only serve God. Although you were slaves, you are now free men. We have no more claim on you, for you are the servants of God. And guess what? Poor old Paroi was so desperate, okay, that he went around the Hebrew quarter and he said what Moshe requested of him, and he basically let the Jews go. It's almost there's a sense here of what happened later on, much later in history, with Haman and Mordechai, where he was forced to go around giving honor to something that he refused completely to give honor to, and eventually he meets his own death. So I think we're going to wrap it up over here. For next week, we are going to start looking at how the Jews actually physically walked out of the land of Egypt. So this is 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Adel Kozulski. Thank you for joining me, and have a wonderful week ahead.